For BBS Radio, this is Health Frontiers with Lexi Ross. Tonight, our guest is a little unusual in that we're going to talk about a transference of energy that comes from two avatars in India. And our guest is Brenda Teagarden, who has really spent her life on a very serious spiritual path, which finally led her to the giving and receiving of Diksha. Good evening, Brenda.
Yes, hello.
I was looking at your bio, and I see that you grew up in Michigan and discovered Edgar Cayce at the tender age of 15, which is kind of unusual.
Yes, it was. I wasn't looking for anything like that. It just kind of came to me. I was doing a part-time job in the summer between, I think it was 9th and 10th grade, and the book just came to me. And I was quite enamored with it, and I had never heard of anything like cosmic consciousness before. So, and it was from there that I began a search. And these kinds of books just kept coming to me. So I kind of felt like I was divinely guided. And so that was the beginning, actually, of me moving away from, I guess, structured religion and traditional paths into something a little more cosmic. And I felt like I was driven from the inside, actually. Like I said, I wasn't really on a conscious level looking for anything like that. It just sort of started coming to me.
Well, what did you do? I mean, I see that you've gone through a number of different disciplines, and you might want to just talk about your background a little bit before we get into the discussion of the Diksha so that people can see the different things that you've experienced.
Surely. I would say, you know, I moved to California in 1969, and I recall, I mean, I wasn't planning on moving there. It was quite by accident that I ended up in Southern California. And I remember one of the first things I was invited to was the play called Hair. And if you'll recall, that's about the Age of Enlightenment and the dawning of the Age of Enlightenment.
Sure, it affected all of us.
What's that?
I said it affected all of us.
It sure did. And that was like in 1969. And from there, I was introduced to Buddhism a little bit and started reading some literature at that time. And I remember meeting my first husband when within a few months of moving to California. And, you know, we got married about 3.5 years later. He was a wonderful, wonderful man. He was wealthy. He was good looking. He was an athlete. He was kind. He was everything that any woman would possibly want in a man, and I did too. But within 2 months of being married, I found myself extremely depressed, and I had to ask myself, why am I so depressed? I have everything I could possibly want. Isn't this what everybody is supposed to want and have? Well, we used to ski, and we went up to Mount Shasta and to Heavenly Valley, and I remember being at the top of the mountain overlooking this beautiful, beautiful lake called Lake Tahoe. Anybody would have been thrilled to be there. I looked out over this lake, and I said, God, is this all there is? And that was the beginning of my search in earnest. And coming back to Los Angeles after that trip, I somehow found this bookstore called the Bodhi Tree Bookstore. And it's a famous bookstore in Los Angeles. And I went there, and little by little, I started getting into different, you know, books. I found a book, a series of books, actually, one on Raja Yoga, one on Yani Yoga, another one on Science of Breath and Karma Yoga. So I bought them all and started studying. Well, it was probably no more than having been into the first chapter of the Raja Yoga book, and it was talking about, well, you're not your body, you're not your mind, you're not your emotions, you're eternal, and all of these wonderful things. And I thought, well, that's lovely. And it went on to say, but, you know, if you just believe this, it doesn't mean anything. You have to have your own direct experience to know that this is true. Well, I got sleepy. And so I just kind of put the book down for a second and fell back, you know, and fell asleep on the sofa. Within a minute or two, I was out of my body, literally floating above my body. And I looked down and saw my physical body lying on the sofa. So
did that frighten you?
What's that?
Did it frighten you?
No, I wasn't frightened at all.
Okay.
It was just unusual.
Uh-huh.
And And it was, I mean, I was a little startled at first, you know, like, wow. But, you know, and then I eventually came back into my body, and I realized that I truly wasn't my body, that I was much more than that. I started having these spontaneous experiences over the next, 10, 15 years. I never tried to have them. I would go to sleep at night. The minute I would fall asleep, between that period between waking and sleep, I would literally start to rise up out of my physical body, and I would start to travel.
And where were you going?
Different places. Well, I wasn't always conscious everywhere I was going. I was mostly conscious when I was leaving my body and coming back into it. It wasn't until years later, when I got involved with the teachings of the Ascended Masters, is when I started realizing I was being taken to inner retreats given by these ascended beings. And that was back in, like, in 1978. And also during that time, I was guided to do this course called Fisher-Hoffman Process. It is now called the Quadrinity Process.
And that's one you might want to explain. I've never heard of that one.
Oh, well, this was wonderful. At the time, it was a 2.5-month process, and it was called Getting Divorced from Mom and Dad. Somehow, I had something inside of me that knew that for me to move along my path, I had to reach a point of forgiveness and compassion for my parents. And that's exactly what this course was about. It was a 2.5-month process at the time. It was probably one of the most intense experiences I think I've ever gone through, because not only did we look at some of our traits and tendencies of our parents, but we went back to our ancestors. We went all the way back and saw how those traits are just passed on from generation to generation. And literally, I was able to break the chains that bound not only me, but any future generations. It was incredible. Some of the miracles that happened during that time were just amazing. Like right before, they had two weekends. One was father bitch session, and the other was mother bitch, where you just get all of your anger and things out. Well, right before I was getting ready to do father bitch work, my father called me the night before and wanted to know what I was up to. He felt something. And his mother had called him, said, "What's Brenda up to? We haven't heard from her in a while." So it was really interesting how that happened. And then when I got ready to do work with my mother, an aunt of hers called her, whom she'd not heard from in 20 years, who had had a major impact on her teen years, and not in a positive light either. She called. It was just an amazing thing that went on. And during that process, I would say just about towards the end of it, I was sitting in class, and all of a sudden this energy started to move from the base of my spine all the way up through my chakras. Only I didn't know that's what was happening in that moment. It wasn't until later, but this energy started to move. And
so was it a complete kundalini?
Yes.
Experience.
Well, I wouldn't say it was complete at the time. It moved and opened up all of my lower chakras up through my heart and my throat chakra. And
Interesting. It
settled for a little while at my heart in the center of my chest. And I thought, my God, what's going on? It was intense. And I thought I was having a heart attack. So I went up to my teacher, who was assigned to me during that process, and asked her, or told her what was going on. And she asked me to describe it, which I did. And she smiled, and she said, "This is a very positive thing. I want you to just go and sit and be by yourself and just experience the energy." Well, this energy started to move. Once it moved through the blockage in my heart chakra, it started to move between that and my throat chakra. And it just moved back and forth, until it completely cleared those areas. And that went on for several days.
Now, when they did this, did they facilitate it through meditation? Is that how it came about?
No, what they had, it was eclectic. It was there were a lot of psychologists and spiritual teachers involved in the. There were about 8 teachers, and they all had various disciplines that they'd, you know, been working through and working with. And so, it was psychology, it was spirituality, it was different things. Plus, I was doing mantras as well and invoking, you know. Rama at the time, and literally this energy just started moving. So I don't know that that happened for every person in that course. There were 24 of us, but I do know that that's what happened with me. And it opened up things that I had never experienced before in my life.
Like,
I started having very, very magical experiences and things that, you know, I probably wouldn't share with too many people because they would probably think I was a little crazy. But nevertheless, it did happen, and it was a very, very magical time for me.
And then that led you to the Avatar.
Then eventually that led me to, there were other things in between, but, it led me to Avatar. And that was I was at a healing it was a kind of a workshop out in the desert, Yucca Valley, actually. And we were working on, doing healing energies for the planet, and that's where I found out about Avatar. And something just told me this was my next step. And so I found out about it, someone called me, and I went and did the Avatar course in San Francisco. It was a 7-day course at the time. And then within 9 months, I went on to do the master's course so I could deliver the course myself. And so I did that for a number of years. Fabulous, fabulous course.
And what was the most significant thing that you think you learned from the Avatar training?
Well, that our beliefs create our own reality, that what we put our attention upon is what we create. That is what, and that we do have the ability to shift what is going on with us, that we can eliminate and discreate limiting and negative beliefs. And also, probably the most important thing is to return to source consciousness. When we eliminate those blockages, we can return to source consciousness. And when I say source, that can mean the presence, it can mean God. There's many different names for the same thing, as I'm sure you're well aware of. So, but in Avatar, they called it source.
Uh-huh.
And because of the word God is kind of charged for a lot of people.
Well, sure.
So anyway, I did that for a number of years, and I loved it. It was great. But I did have a few misgivings, and the misgivings that I had was that if we want to awaken the planet, and we had to have something that was available to more people. And I felt that $2,300, which is what the Avatar course cost, and 9 days, not everybody has that time or that amount of money. I always felt that we needed to awaken more people much more quickly. And so I prayed and put it out to the universe that we needed something that was accessible and affordable for everybody on the planet. That enlightenment shouldn't be just for the rich.
That's right.
It has to be for everybody.
That's
and
right.
And my whole thing is I want to be of service. I want to be of service. I have a lot of knowledge. I've done so much work on myself over the years. It would be a shame not to awaken more people than what I was able to do at the time of the Avatar course. And just recently is when Diksha, or from Oneness University, came to me.
Say that again. The Oneness University.
Yes, Oneness University. It's called the Oneness Movement. And Oneness University, what that is, it's a university whereby people can go and spend 21 days in India, in Chennai, India, where they call it Golden City, and experience this process and to become initiated to be able to transfer that energy to everyone else. And so I did that in March, and it was just unbelievable.
Well, now, tell us about the people who are transferring this energy.
Well, there's two avatars. They call them twin avatars. And that's Sri Yama and Sri Bhagavan. And he was born in 1949. She was born in 1954. And they call him twin avatars because they're avatars of enlightenment. They're a married couple. And she is a very, very, very powerful healer. And Bhagavan, from the time he was a young child, had felt that he was here to help humanity, to bring freedom to humanity. So they met, and they got married. They even have a child. His name is Krishna, and he is also very enlightened. And so they started this school called Jiva Shram. I think it was back in the 1980s. And they had, they were working with the youth in this part of India at the time. Well, about 1989, they started experiencing this energy of cosmic consciousness. It started coming in to, I guess their son was one of them, and then several, maybe about five or six of the other students. And they started just spontaneously going into cosmic consciousness. So
you mean
the,
in their presence, their child would experience some energy transference?
Yes. Well, they call it this golden ball of energy, and that's the Diksha energy. It's the transference of divine energy. It literally creates a shift, a neurobiological shift in the brain.
Now, and how is that different from, say, Shakti or Qi energy?
Well, they've done studies. You know, Shaktipat does, of course, you know, give people a rush, and it does affect the the chakras. But what happens with Diksha, it literally, excuse me, affects the parietal lobes. It begins to quiet them, because in Western man, they're overactive. And then what it also does is to activate the frontal lobe. That's where the higher centers are. So that's the difference that I've been told and understand between that and just regular Shaktipat.
Now, where is the parietal lobe of the brain?
They're on the side of the head, a little bit towards the back.
I see.
Yes. So, there's a gentleman, his name's Christian Opitz. He's from Germany, and he's a researcher. And he's done tests and studies on people that have, before they've received the Diksha and after they receive the Diksha. And you can definitely see what's happening in the brain.
Is that right?
Yes, there's a definite shift. As a matter of fact, right before I came back from India in March, we were told that Princeton University wants to go over there and study some of the dasas. The dasas are also called monks. So they're going to be over there studying also.
The dasas, now those are the people that are giving Diksha?
Yes, they're the ones that are also guiding. They're the ones who run Oneness University and basically working with the people that are coming from all over the world to take this course. They lead us in meditation and what they call homas. And a homa is spiritual purification, and where we eliminate some of the blockages that we have. We offer them up it's an ancient Vedic ritual whereby we eliminate some of the impediments to our to becoming one and to becoming enlightened.
When you say you offer them up, what is that process?
Through intention.
I see.
Basically through intention. They do.
So they create a frequency that allows that to happen? Is that
yes,
a shift in frequency?
It's a beautiful ancient ritual, and it's very, very sacred. And they invoke deities and also the ascended host in heaven and to be present to assist us. And then we, through intention, offer that up into the fire, into the ritual, basically. And it is incredible what happens. I mean, literally, people just go through a lot of releasing during that time. And it goes on for about an hour, hour and a half. And we did this about, I would say, every other day. During that 21-day process.
Huh.
And then
so
we would go.
Is it sort of like a primal scream process? I mean,
I wouldn't say it was like a primal scream because nobody's screaming there, but you could definitely see people releasing in kriyas. You know, kriyas are like these knots that in our nervous system, you can see them releasing in certain people. But
is there a lot of emotional?
Yes,
emotional
people crying or just releasing. You know, not like primal scream or anything like that. It's it's quiet. It's just more of an internal thing that's going on. But tears would definitely be flowing down people's cheeks in that.
Now, how did you come to find it in the first place?
Well, I know someone that worked at the Body Awareness Studio. And she's the owner there, and she had told me about this, and she gave me a flyer, and, you know, she mentioned that she had gone, and I said, well, is this for real? You know, there's a lot of things out there, and I thought, you know, I long ago stopped attending a lot of different things, but she said yes. She said it's definitely for real. So I decided to go, and Freddie, who was from Sweden, had gone and to Oneness University back in June of 2004, and he became enlightened when he was there. And he had also been working with Bhagavan and Amma for a number of years, doing other kinds of courses, but they started releasing this to the public back in 2004. So he started traveling with a partner, her name is Madeline, and they came here to Atlanta, and I think the first time they come had been in September, and then another time, and then in December when I went. Well, we did a short little meditation. I would say there were about 100 people in the room. And then he was going to go around, and how we transmit the energy is to literally lay hands on the top of a person's head. And it's only for about a minute, and the energy gets transmitted. And as he was walking over to me, I was the first one he did this with because of where I was sitting. He came over and before he even put his hands on me, I could start to feel the energy already. But when he put his hands on my head, I felt such an electrical current go through the left side of my brain. It was unbelievable. And there was a spontaneous release of tears down my cheeks. And I felt so peaceful, and I felt so much love. It was incredible. Even as I speak about it right now, just through intention, I feel it all over again. It's just amazing. And I knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that this was real. It was unmistakable. Not only did I experience it on an emotional level, on a mental level, but also on a physical and a spiritual level.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I came home that evening. I got on the website, and I started looking because I knew that was it. That's what I had been waiting for a number of years. Even though it's not so inexpensive to go there to become a Diksha giver, but it's available for the rest of humanity at a very, very, very affordable price. And it's available for all and accessible to all. And it only takes a minute to transmit rather than 9 days and going through technique after technique after technique.
Well, what is the average charge for receiving Diksha?
Well, I'm just charging $25.
Uh-huh.
And it's good to water the Diksha. We don't like to give it more than a couple of times a week, but people can come once a week or they can come twice a month if they want. But until the energies are completely integrated and one comes into full enlightenment, it's a good idea to continue to water the inner, the seed. It's basically, it's almost like a seed. You're watering a seed, and it's the seed of enlightenment and oneness.
So how many treatments does it take for someone to, start experiencing changes in their consciousness?
Well, some people will start experiencing things right away. Everyone starts experiencing right away, but everyone is unique, and everyone is completely different. There are almost 6.5 billion people on the planet. There are 6.5 billion ways to experience the Diksha and enlightenment. There are no two ways. Everyone is different. It all depends on one's karma. It depends on their past lives, if one believes in that. It also depends on your childhood conditioning. It depends on a lot of different things. Where you're at in your life circumstances right now, how much you've forgiven your parents. Our parents are our first male and female in our lives. It's the most critical. They can totally determine how your relationships work for you and the rest of your life.
Well,
until those relationships are healed, then it's going to slow down the process of enlightenment. So that's the first thing to work on. That's the very, very first thing to work on.
Well, what were some of the examples of what you saw when you were in India? I mean, or changes in people that you began to
work. Oh, it was incredible. I was in a dorm room, and that's the other thing. It's totally clean. It's totally set up for Western people. It's air-conditioned dorm rooms. Everything's very, very clean. They're very well taken care of there. But I was in a room with 12 other women. If you can imagine 12 other women in one dorm room. But we became almost like one towards the end of that process. It was just so beautiful. You could feel, you could see that people were literally looking younger and younger through that 21-day process and becoming more loving, more tolerant, less judgmental. It was amazing just to watch what happened with people, including myself. Just watching. And, people would come and say, "Oh, my God, you look so much younger today," Because when you release all of those tensions and blockages, that's what ages people.
Uh-huh.
So when you release that, people automatically start to look more youthful.
Well, when you say that it's the Oneness University, can you describe a little bit more about that? And when did they establish this university?
It was established in 1989. That's when this golden ball of enlightenment started happening. And it wasn't until, like I said, in 2004 that Amma and Bhagavan decided it was time for the rest of humanity to have this. They were just basically working on the students there and the people, the local people, and then they realized it was time to give it to the rest of humanity. Bhagavan feels like that the whole, you know, the planet is in a very critical place right now, that he wants to see the entire planet to be awakened by 2012. That is what they call the end of the Mayan calendar. So that is his intention. The only way that can happen is if people feel called to become Diksha givers or teachers, and they go over to India to be initiated. And then they can go out and give it to the world. And this is for everyone. It's for everyone. It's not just for an exclusive group of people. And so by many people like myself going over to India and then coming back can begin to give this Diksha energy to a lot of people.
Well, how many people attend the university at one given time?
Well, during my process, there were about 240 people there.
Uh-huh.
And in the January process, there were about 400 people there. This is from all over the world. This is not just from America. I mean, we probably had the smallest group here in America because they kind of came here last. But Japan had a large group coming right after we left. I mean, there's people from China going. There's people from Mexico going. There's people from all over the world going to this. Russia. There's a lot of people in Russia who have gone to the university. There's probably 15 to 30 million people who have now received Diksha in the world. It's hard to keep track because that's a lot of people. But that's not how many who have gone to the university, of course, because not everybody is giving Diksha.
When you say university, I mean, is it set up like a university would be set up in America?
No. What it is, they've got a male dorm room, a male dorm building and a female building dorm, and then they have the cafeteria where people eat every day, and they feed us very well, three times a day. And then they have several meditation rooms, one for the women, one for the men. They keep them separate. Partly it's a cultural thing. But beyond that, because the kundalini energies, when it starts moving, it can be experienced sometimes as sexual. So they keep the men and women separate as much as possible. So just because it's a diversion sometimes, and they really want us to be focused on our inner work while we're there. So it's not a typical university. It's a university of inner growth.
Hmm.
So we have the meditation rooms. We have the Homa area where we do the fire rituals, the purification.
So it sounds like a relatively small facility.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's four campuses, and the one we were at is the campus two, and that's primarily for the Westerners, for the English-speaking people. Well, not just English-speaking, but for the Westerners, I should say.
Uh-huh.
And who
goes to the other ones then? You know, like
well, they've brought indigenous people to the other one. Like when I was there, they on one of the campuses, they had 15 indigenous people from some from Africa, from here in the United States, and different. I don't remember the other countries they were from, but there were about 15 of them, and they didn't have to pay anything to go. This was paid for by the university itself.
Why was that?
Why is that? Because they know that the indigenous people do not have the kind of money to be able to afford that.
I see.
And these people will go back to their own cultures and begin to awaken the people in their own cultures. And that's what's happening.
Well, that's very gracious of them.
It is. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, I was so impressed when I was there. You just have no idea. It is just an amazing experience there. And they are all truly so dedicated. And the dasas, or the monks, is you want to call them, are just unbelievably pure beings. They are just so wise and just so dedicated to this movement. And
now, are the dasas mostly Indian?
Yeah, they were all Indian. Now, there were a couple of American, not Americans, but Western-speaking people.
Uh-huh.
One of them who is now in a state of total cosmic consciousness. So she is no longer a dasa. She is simply what they call a cosmic being. And she is in a state of cosmic consciousness all the time.
And what does she do?
What? I'm sorry?
What does she do in this state of cosmic?
Well, they meditate, and one of the things we would do is to go to one of the campuses and meditate with them.
I see.
There were about eight cosmic beings, And we would just sit in their presence and meditate with them. It was just incredible.
Huh.
And just being in their space allowed us to experience a different level of consciousness, just being there. It would activate something within us. So we did that about, almost every other day for the 21 days that we were there.
So this is not, this is not a religion, right?
No, it is not a religion. There is no teaching. There's no doctrine. There's no nothing. There's just simply the transference of Diksha, this divine energy that plants the seed of enlightenment. It's for every religion. It's for every culture, for every nationality. It belongs to no one. It belongs to everyone.
You know, I wanted to give, we have a new international call-in number, mm-hmm. and that number, in case anyone would like to call in and ask Brenda some questions, is 877-876-5227. Now, when you say that Amma and
Bhagavan
are avatars, so they're not the typical guru
who
asks for a following, right?
No, they do not want followers. They do not want people worshiping them. That's not what this is about. They are simply here to bring this enlightenment energy to everyone on the planet because we are living in a critical time. It is divine. They are assisting humanity to move through this period of time so we can move into the golden age. We've heard about the age of Aquarius. I think we started with that. It's the age of Aquarius is the age of enlightenment. And they call it the golden age. The Mayans, you know, almost every religion or path has spoken about this time in history. And we are there. And it's a critical time. And it's so important for mankind to wake up and to become enlightened now. We have to move beyond this separation and greed that and selfishness that man is ensconced in right now. It's critical that we move beyond it. Otherwise, we're gonna destroy ourselves.
Absolutely.
So they're here to serve.
Well, now, how many people would you say are giving Diksha in America now? Do you have any idea?
My understanding is that there's about 400. Oh, no, I'm sorry. There's about 270 people in America now who have gone to India to Oneness University. And there's probably going to be, I would say, about 500 before the end of the year.
I see.
That's just in America. There are people all over the rest of the world. Japan is growing even faster than America is.
Is that right?
And Russia is, yes. There are many more. There's a lot more Diksha givers in Sweden, in Russia, in Japan, and let's see what other. Also in Mexico, it's in Brazil. Now, it is an amazing phenomenon that is growing all over this planet. It is growing very, very fast.
Now, there's a few celebrities that have...
Yes, there are. Matter of fact, Linda Gray, the one that used to be on Dallas, do you remember her?
Not
She's
really.
Experienced
I'm not
it several
much of a
times.
Television watcher.
Yeah, she used to be on Dallas. And also Catherine Oxenberg has been involved in it. Also Lindsay Wagner, the one who used to be the bionic woman,
she
is a Diksha giver herself, and she goes around and gives Diksha to a lot of celebrities in California. And not just celebrities, it's just that she has more of a connection to them. Prince and Princess of Austria have gone to receive Diksha in India. And governors, it is amazing. And they said it's probably the best thing they ever, ever did for themselves and for their country.
Well, now, in America, if someone wants to receive Diksha, mm-hmm. and that's spelled D-E-E-K-S-H-A,
yeah. There's two ways to spell it. The Sanskrit way and the way it's spelled in India is D-E-E-K-S-H-A. Sometimes the Westerners will spell it D-I-K-S-H-A. So the listeners may see it in two different ways, but both it's the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, tell us how, you know, how does it take place in America? How does one access?
Well, I'm currently giving Diksha. I can either do it by phone. I can do it. There's what we call distance phone Diksha. It can be done over the phone. Or people can literally come to me and individually, and I can lay my hands on their head and give them Diksha. We would do like a short meditation prior to that, and, you know, to bring a little sacredness you know, to the energy. Also, I'm going to be giving workshops the second and fourth Thursday at the Harmony Place in Roswell, Georgia. And I will.
When you say a workshop, how does that work?
Well, it would be like for an hour and a half, and two evenings a month, where people can come. We'll do some meditation work. We'll do some spiritual work. And then I will also give the Diksha. It won't be just one. I will be giving probably two Dikshas. And also there is healing Diksha as well.
What
this
do you mean?
Energy
wait a minute,
can heal.
Let me back up. What do you mean by two Dikshas?
Well, I'll put my hands on their head during maybe an early part of the evening, and then at the end I'll also put my hands on their head again. So they have at least two Dikshas before they leave.
I see.
Right.
I see.
And then there's also healing Diksha. So there's different ways to do the Diksha. I can do distance Diksha with the phone, or I can do it in person, or they can come to the workshop.
And how is the healing Diksha different?
Well, it's supposed to focus on just one area at a time. Like, you can't just say, I want to heal my whole body. Let's say you have something with your knee that you would like to have healed. You would be very specific in what you wanted to have healed, and then we would give a healing Diksha for the knee, for instance. And I would put my hands on their knee. Or if it was something to do with their intestines, maybe, or their liver, or whatever, it could be anything. And I would place my hands on that area of their body.
So when you're doing that, though, you're not, going to a different vibratory level? Are you concentrating differently than when you would just give ordinary touch?
Yes, concentrating and with my intention that it be a healing Diksha. There's the Diksha of Enlightenment, which is what when we place our hands on a person's head, and then the healing Diksha, excuse me, the healing Diksha is with intent, and the person would focus, as well as myself, with what they want to have healed, and we would do the healing Diksha. And, you know, something might heal right away, or it may take two or three or four Dikshas. You know, every situation is different. Once again, it goes back to their karma, their childhood conditioning, and then some people are being served on a karmic level by having a disease. They're learning something from it spiritually. So some people may not get healed, but most people do have a healing that occurs. As a matter of fact, when I was in India, I experienced a healing, and it was...
What became healed?
Well, I'd always had a problem with slow digestion.
Uh-huh.
And when I was there in India, I literally asked for that my stomach or intestines to be healed.
Uh-huh.
And I had to ask about three different times on the inner. And when I say ask, I'm referring to my inner presence. And that's so I asked that. And then finally, one evening, it was actually the day before my initiation, I woke up. It was around midnight. And I was in such agony and physical pain in my entire stomach area and even through my back. And this went on, I must say, it went on until about 6 o'clock in the morning. I would wake up, I'd go back to sleep, and it was just so much pain. And I remember cleansing, and it was emotional too, but I was going back to memories that I had forgotten so long ago. Some of them I couldn't even remember the exact event, but it was like a feeling of when I was like a tiny baby. It was unconscious material that was coming up, and there was anger, and there was sadness. And anyway, finally around 6 o'clock in the morning, it started to clear. I literally felt like I had been operated on. It was like post-surgery. I swear to God, it was like that. And I was so weak that whole day, just completely weak. But from that point forward, I felt that my digestive system has improved 100%.
Well, can you give us any other examples of someone else having a physical healing that you knew about?
Yeah, there were other people. Like some people are having trouble with their gums, and they said that their gums, they when they went through the healing, they were, you know, got swollen, and then they just kind of cleared up. And but before people got healed, I noticed they went through what I call like a healing crisis. It's like it got more exaggerated at first, and then it would just clear up. And, you know, it was hard. It's hard for me to tell you more because we were in silence for 19 days of the 21 days.
So
couldn't really talk to many people. I just know from, you know, talking to people since I've been back that they've experienced healing. But I just know what happened for me. And if people want to look, they can go on to www.onenessmovement.org, and then they can start to read about some of the people's experiences and things. But,
well, how do you feel? I mean, how do you feel overall? I mean, you've been through so many different things.
Mm-hmm.
How is this different from the very...
I'll tell you how this is different. Everything else that I have done up until this point was work. It was a lot of work. It was effort on my part. It was intense. It was something that I had to do. I had, you know, like work, effort. This is the grace. I feel that I have finally come to the grace. I've come to the door of grace in my life. And that's how everybody else experiences it too. And that's what Bhagavan Nama call. This is the grace. We've all done our sadhana, what I mean by sadhana, our spiritual practices, for so many years. Many people have been on the path for years and years and years, or lifetimes. We've done this for so, so long. People have been praying for the grace. The grace is here. This is how this is different. It is so different. I feel like I've done everything I could possibly do to reach that place of being fully enlightened and coming into a place of oneness that I could possibly do. And now it's just being done for us. It's grace. I don't know how else to describe it other than it's grace.
Well,
like Avatar was technique.
Uh-huh.
That's
a good way of describing it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, it almost sounds like the grace that people experienced when they were in front of Jesus.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said that it almost sounds like the grace that people experienced when they were in front of Jesus.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, Bhagavan says this is a continuation of the work of Jesus. It is simply a continuation. Jesus laid his hands on people, and people got healed. This is what this is. It's this, so simply. And the amazing thing is, in my very last Homa, the last purification rite that I went through, I'm sitting there. I must have knew something was coming up that day because I wasn't feeling especially good that morning when I woke up. But I'm sitting there in the Homa, and I wasn't paying that much attention to what they were doing. But all of a sudden, I felt this presence come into my heart, and he announced himself. This is Jesus.
Wow.
Yes. Tears just started coming down my cheeks, unbelievably. And it was a healing. I said, well, what do you do? What are you here for? He said,
Did you really?
Yeah. I'm saying this on the inner, of course. I'm not saying it out loud because there's many people around. But I'm saying this on the inner. It was a felt experience. I could see him in my mind's eye. I could feel his presence. It was so sweet. And he said, I came to heal my relationship with you. My relationship with you was damaged when you were a young child. And it was damaged because when I was conceived and born, my father was studying to be a minister in Lee College in Cleveland, Tennessee. And that's the Church of God. He was a womanizer. He was a violent man. So I did not have any faith or trust in Jesus Christ. And he apologized for that. He apologized for the misunderstanding of my relatives and father. And he apologized to me. He said what saved me was that I lived what his message was. That's what helped me. Because I believed in his message. Whether I believed in him or not, I believed in his message.
I think that's probably true of a lot of people today.
Yes.
Who are seeking, you know, because Christianity in many ways has been so misinterpreted and there's so much judgment.
Exactly. And that's what he said. He said, I apologize. He said, they are no different than the Sadducees and the Pharisees of all. They live the letter of the law, but they do not live the spirit of it. And so there was a healing that took place between me and Jesus at Oneness University in India.
That's pretty powerful. You can't say much more.
It was very powerful. And he said, I am responsible for you being here in India. I have work for you to do in America. When you go back to America, I have work for you to do. And that's what he said.
Wow.
I would have to say that was probably the single most powerful experience I had there, was my experience with Jesus.
Well, I would think so.
Yeah. And that was 2 days before I left. That happened. So it was an amazing experience. And then Krishna showed up. They're all one. And he said that this work is true. And I said, is there any reason why I shouldn't trust Amma and Bhagavan? He said, no, what they're doing is perfect. They were brought here. They are true avatars of enlightenment. And that they are here to enlighten humanity.
And what did you say was the percentage? You said something about...
I'm sorry?
You said something about... what it would take, how much percent of the world population
to change. Oh, yes. Bhagavan feels that it will take, and there's a scientific study that states this too. Anyone, I don't know if your listeners have heard about the 100th monkey, but anyway, it will take 0.001% of the population to become enlightened to help awaken the rest of the world. That's all it will take. So that's 67. It used to be 64,000 when we first started 2 years ago. It's now 67,000 because the population keeps growing. But that's the number that it will take to be fully to be enlightened, to awaken the rest of humanity, so that we can move into the golden age by 2012.
Well, now I'm curious. When you were at the university, do Amma and Bhagavan, do they speak English?
Bhagavan speaks English very well. Very well. And Amma speaks a little bit, but she's more silent. She simply gives her darshan to people, and she blesses people.
Uh-huh.
So she doesn't talk a lot, but she does a little bit. But I didn't hear her speak, except for...
Well, now, when you're there, do they themselves give you the diksha?
They do not. No, it would be way too powerful.
Really?
Yes, way too powerful. Yes, the diksha is done through the dasas, all the dasas, and the cosmic beings. That's who it's done through. No, the current would probably be much too powerful if it was coming directly from Bhagavan.
Until you get to a certain level of purification, I suppose.
Yes, if we got to a certain level. But the thing is, we have to come back to the United States and be functional. We would probably be dysfunctional for a little while until we integrated the energy. So he can't give the full on. Because we have to, we come back to America, we got to work, we got to do this, we got to do that, we got to run a household. So, it's all done through the dasas who are specifically, initiated to give the diksha to the students that come there.
Well, do you have any other observations about the process that you would like to share with our listeners?
I just think it's the simplest, sweetest, most profound energy that I have come across in my 40 years of being on the spiritual path. And I only mentioned just a smidgen, a handful of what I've been involved. I've probably studied every religion, every spiritual path out there. I'm an avid reader. I've studied it all, meditated for years. This is the simplest thing that I have ever come across, and it's profound, and it definitely, definitely works.
And you're saying that this diksha
mm-hmm.
is done just is transmitted in just one moment, 1 minute's time?
That's what I felt, in one moment. That's all it takes. That's all it took for me. Now, everybody may not experience all that kind. Some people may not experience it for 2 days or 3 days or a little down the road. Some people don't feel the energy coming in, but then they'll notice 2 days later they're feeling all this divine love. So every single person is different. I don't want to give the impression that everybody's going to experience what I did when they put their hand on my head, all this tingling, but a lot of people do. Most people do, I believe. Of course, I don't talk to most people, but people keep coming back. That's all I know.
I experienced Diksha from you, and I have to say that I saw immediately when you put put your hands on my head, I saw a great white light in my head.
Uh-huh.
And my whole crown chakra was kind of throbbing.
Oh, yes.
And that's happened to me now. I guess I've received Diksha 3 times.
Yes, that's right.
And I just go into this incredibly euphoric state of relaxation.
Exactly.
And the other night, when you gave me, when I experienced your treatment, I was actually kind of giddy. I felt very light and,
mm-hmm.
And happy, and just had a very overall sense of well-being. And by the way, I tend to have insomnia,
mm-hmm.
and I had a really good night's sleep that night too.
Well, that's what happens. That's what happens. It's causeless love and limitless joy is what starts to arise. And the more people receive the Diksha, the more divine love they start to feel, unconditional love. They start to feel joyful for no reason at all, just because that is man's natural state.
Exactly.
Man's natural state is a state of joy and love and peace. And all that this energy is doing is helping to remove those impediments and blockages so people can experience what they were meant to experience.
Well, yeah. How can, if, you know, the listeners get a hold of you, you have an email address.
They can reach me at Diksha@mindspring.com. I'm in the process of getting my website set up. Like I said, I just got back from India a little bit ago. But Diksha, DeekShaMindspring.com, or they can reach me at 770-640-0801. That is my home number.
Well,
either way, they can write me and tell them that if you try to put something in the subject about Diksha, just put Diksha. And
uh-huh.
then I'll know exactly.
So that they'll recognize the mail.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I can set up a transmission by phone if they're not in Georgia. I can, you know, or I can redirect them to someone else.
So do you have a list of people in other cities of the country where
The ones that I have are the women that were in my dorm room when I was in India. Of course, not all of them are here in the United States, but there are several, you know, interspersed around the country, yes.
Right.
Yes, I do.
Well,
listen,
I just want to thank you for sharing your wonderful experience and for coming to talk to our listeners.
Oh.
And I just bless you on your way, and I hope that what we've talked about tonight inspires other people to reach out and receive Diksha, because it's certainly a wonderful experience. And good night, and thank you for coming.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, Lexi. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Good night.
Uh-huh. Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.